and welcome to the unreleased The Design Research Podcast. This podcast exists to help map, broadcast, and promote design research worldwide. The unreleased podcast is brought to you by IAD, Universidade Europeia, and UNIDCOM. The interview was recorded at IAD as part of the PhD in Design program. To know more, visit unreleased.unidcom-iad.pt. That's .unidcom-iad.pt. In this episode, recording during the 2020 Doctoral Design Consortium, Professor Rodrigo Hernandez Ramirez talks with Eric Stolterman, Professor of Informatics and Senior Executive Associate Dean at the School of Informatics, Computing, and Engineering at Indiana University, Bloomington. He is also a professor in design at the Institute of Design at Umeå University in Sweden. Stolterman's research are within the areas of interfaces, interactivity, interaction design, design practice, philosophy, and theory of design. His most recent books are Thoughtful Interaction Design, The Design Way, and The Things That Keep Us Busy, The Elements of Interaction. During this conversation, Stolterman talks about the design way to handle complexity in the dynamically changing world, the design behind the traditions of knowledge, shifts in the design field, philosophy of technology, research, and what he believes to be the temporary foundations to design education.
If you don't think about design in the right way, you will make so many mistakes that it will be impossible.
Here are Rodrigo and Stolterman.
I'm Rodrigo Ramirez. I'm the scientific coordinator of the design area here at IAD. My area is interaction design, so I've been following your work closely for a long time. I was actually preparing for this interview. I was reading a paper from you from 2008. I think you touched upon many of these subjects that has to do with what epistemic position does design play in relationship to science and art, this instability that is intrinsic to design. And I did quite a few annotations here. I really see this kind of bleak view that you brought to the table that might seem bleak to beginning students. But basically, would I be correct to say that what you're saying here is that design involves coming to terms with complexity and most of all with uncertainty? Would that be like an extremely oversimplifying summary?
Well, first of all, I want to say, I don't really think it's a bleak picture.
I just say I don't say it is a bleak, but it might sound bleak.
Like it may, and I know it sounds almost a little scary. And I talked about that at the very end. I mean, it's scary because it's overwhelming. It sounds overwhelmingly difficult, you know. But to first comment on that, I'll come back to your question. Of course, it sounds almost like design is impossible when you think about it in this way. But that's not the point of what I'm talking. The point what I'm talking about is if you don't think about design in the right way, you will make so many mistakes that it will be impossible. The cool thing with design is people are designing amazing things all the time. All around the world, there are people and groups and teams who design these amazing things and services and processes and all kinds of things. So it is possible. It's not impossible. It's actually quite possible to do good design. But if you think about it in the wrong way, it becomes almost impossible. That is kind of the key. And to me, that is very optimistic and positive view. It means that, yes, design is a way to handle complexity and dynamically changing world that other approaches like science is not designed for. Science is not designed to do that. design has evolved into something, a way of thinking, a way of doing that can actually handle that complexity.
You mentioned your definition or your broad definition of design. I believe it comes from Herbert Simon, of changing situations or existing situations to better situations. And I'm going to piggyback right on a question by the audience, kind of an assertion, because there seems to be, there's many approaches to design, being an approach to knowledge or an epistemic approach in itself. There's many, many different approaches to design. And there's this constant struggle towards trying to steer design towards a more scientific, more experimental or closer to science and the more intuition-based kind of practice. You seem to be taking or trying to take the best of both worlds, like retaining this necessity of the judgment, this ethical stance that is intrinsic. The moral experience of the designer plays a definitive role in the way that she conducts the design. But at the other hand, we are still trying to follow this modernist intention of science, of changing, of transforming the world that is deeply embedded into design. We go back to Bacon and probably the Renaissance of harnessing things to change the world. So how do you see that discussion between becoming, following either of these two paths? I know that probably your answer is going to be a third way, but for the audience.
Yeah, I would say it's a third way. So the way I think about this, I think I talked about these high-level traditions in the beginning. I talked about science as one, art as one, design as one, politics as one, you know. And we have to understand that those approaches, all those approaches are design. I mean, science is not what it is because we found it in nature. Politics, we didn't find it in nature, and art, the same thing. It's because people have actually designed those processes. Of course, it's not a one-person design. It's a process that goes on for centuries and more than centuries, where a lot of people are involved in doing it, in designing these processes. But there's always been, they've done it with a purpose in mind. So science has evolved over 400 years with a pretty clear purpose. And even though the purpose has changed a lot over 400 years, and we have philosophy of science that look at this, and they looked at it back from the 2,000 years ago more, and you can see how people understand knowledge, what they understood as true knowledge, correct knowledge, etc., etc., and how to do that. So, but there is a tradition, and that tradition is design. I think the mistake that people have made in the last, 50 years, 100 years, whatever, is to believe that you can take one approach and use it for a different purpose without problems. So the idea that you can take science as an approach and use it as a way of creating things that doesn't exist doesn't really make sense from a science perspective. In the same way, it doesn't necessarily make sense to take the art approach as a way of creating stable and evidence-based knowledge, because that was never the case. It was never the purpose. The art as an approach never tried to do that. They create knowledge in their own way, but never with the same purpose as science. So I have no problems with any of these traditions. They all work well. I mean, science has been extremely successful, and it's one of the most important processes that we have as humans. Art equally, design equally. When you start to mix them, when you start to really mix them, that's when you start to have trouble. And So I never say that, like some people, that design is a mix of art and science. I do not believe that. I think that creates so many conceptual problems because it's not mixing those two. Design is its own tradition. It has its own purpose, and the purpose is to create things that does not exist and create them in the world. And it's not based on correct knowledge or some kind of artistic vision. No, that's not what design is. Design can have those things involved in it, but the design is to create things that we desire. That's very simple.
Yeah.
In a way, that's very simple. But
it's very simple and complex at the same time. I was thinking, I'm trying to bring a lot of things and trying to make sense of all of the things that you say. I don't know if you're aware of Glenn Parsons' Philosophy of Design. It's a book in 2000. He published it in 2015. It's a rather interesting attempt on building or trying to think about design as a philosophical problem. One of the things he brings, Glenn Parsons.
Oh, okay.
Philosophy of Design.
Yeah.
He mentions what he calls the epistemic or an intrinsic epistemic problem in design, that it is that when we design, we don't have the luxury of accumulated knowledge, some of the things that you mentioned in your talk previously. And it is closely related with the problem of induction that science has for a long, long time tried to avoid. And my question goes to this sense. Would you believe or would you agree that this subtle attention design is getting is because we are once again realizing that the world and our surroundings and whatever that we do are so much complex, so difficult to manage, that we need to look at an approach, a way of seeing that is geared from the start point to dealing with that complexity, with embracing that complexity and assuming that we are ignorant of many aspects of the process that we go. And when I mentioned bleak was because it is looking into the abyss in a way, yeah, and saying, okay, I assume you exist and that I have to deal with you. Yeah. And would you say that going back to design, just to reframe the question or to restate the question, that the attention that design has been getting is because of that recognition of the complexity that the world brings?
Yes. I think it is to some degree a consequence of people realizing that using some of the existing approaches and methods that we've had, that's been kind of very, say, functional, quite simplistic methods, doesn't really work. But so yes, that is one part why there is an interest in design today. But I wanna again say something that I didn't say, but I think it's important to say. I do not believe it is obviously the case that we all experience the world to become more and more complex and dynamic and difficult to understand to some extent, even though we produce more knowledge than ever in history today. It doesn't seem to work together. But to design this pen is not less complex and less difficult than designing a system for healthcare in a country. I always like to make that argument. And it's a theoretical argument in some cases, in some ways. I mean, there are some differences, of course, because if you fail designing a pen, it may not be the end of the world. If you fail and design a really bad health system, yeah, it may have serious consequences. So on that sense, of course, it's different. But the complexity of designing a pen like this is infinite too. This is it's just a regular pen. Mm-hmm. You can imagine how many variables are involved. Well, when it comes to shape, just shape, it has infinite possibilities. Colors, function, size, everything. And for whom? And who is going to use it? And for what? And when? And should it be for a long time? Should it be expensive, cheap? Should we use simple material, expensive material? Should it have an emotional aspect? Should it have an ethical aspect? All those questions, every question, design question, exists even in something as simple as a pen. So the complexity that people are experiencing today, I hope it will also open people's eye that the same richness, if you want to say, the same richness that is in the big picture exists in the small picture. So for a designer to design a pen, it's not necessarily easier than designing a health system.
Okay. Really interesting argument. I'm going to try to introduce a question by trying to follow up on your talk, trying to introduce a question from the audience. Just seem to be kind of skeptic about this idea that design processes can be boiled down to a formula, a methodology. And I think from my understanding, it has to do with the way that, or the influence that the scientific bar through which a lot of academia, for example, is measured against. So science is a lot about trying to reduce complexity, to try to find formulas that simplify or make complexity understandable. And to a certain degree, Don Norman follows this approach and applies it to design, or this argument. So there's been a large emergence of new methodologies for design that attempt to be kind of magic bullets. And more recently, not just in design, but in a lot of activities in our world, we've seen the incorporation of artificial intelligence thanks to machine learning. So one, our audience is asking, how do you see the introduction of AI systems into design, in the process of designing as an something that could be good, that could be bad? What's your take on that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I actually never really answered that question before. Of course, I've been thinking about it. I actually don't think I have a good answer to that, because when you say AI, artificial intelligence, it's such a wide area. It kind of covers so many different things, from quite simplistic rule-based systems to highly sophisticated deep learning, machine learning systems that no one really understands how they actually work. I can definitely see AI being an interesting partner to designers. One of the things that we have already seen is that you can have systems that help a designer. In some of the things that is difficult for designers is to see relationships between things, is to see patterns. You're looking for patterns, and it's difficult to see. And we do know that AI and machine learning systems today seem to be extraordinarily good at things like that. If that could be translated into something that would actually support design, maybe. But again, all this is just going to be tools for designers. It's just going to be tools that may potentially help designers in the process. The judgment aspect to it will still be there. It'll still be someone needs to design. We have seen examples. I don't know if you've seen. There is an AI system now that some people are thinking is really cool. It actually writes pop songs, popular music. And it creates it from just by itself. And some of them has been, people like them. They listen to them. They think it's okay. They think it's good. So who is the designer? Well, I don't know. I mean, that's the type of questions that we will be facing in the future. But we have faced that before. When our society moved from a craft society to an industrial society, we moved from understanding exactly who had designed and created everything in our environment to a situation where we live in environments where we have no idea who have designed anything in our environment. It's just been produced for us. Maybe it was a machine. Maybe it was a computer system. We don't know. But it's in our environment. I don't know. Humans are extremely good at adapting to these kind of changes. It may be that people will accept it if it fulfills some of their desires in the world, like you get something that is good, reasonable, good quality for a good price. If you want something better, and I do this better, mm-hmm. maybe you want to buy something that is actually designed by a human being. I don't see this as a problem for design. I mean, it raises a lot of other issues in the economic system and in all kinds, but not when it comes to design.
Okay, thank you very much. Now I'm going to introduce another question. I teach design methodology in first year, and I get to see very young minds trying to understand or get the first tools to understanding what their future problem is going to be. And what I always tell them is that, first of all, I try to cram a lot of philosophy of science in there to try to give them as much as possible understanding of where design might be situated in relationship to science and the arts. And what I always tell them is that what I'm attempting to give them is tools for discernment. I cannot think for them, I cannot give them a magic bullet, but try to give them a framework so they can build their own process. And I'm saying this because one of the questions is, what would be the best approach to developing this self-confidence? Or I assume it has to do with finding who you are, especially when you're at these early stages, since you talked about this intrinsic relationship between who you are and the judgments that you make. How can you develop that?
Oh, there are a lot of ways. I do it a lot when I teach design. I teach a little, usually on the graduate level, so I have the students at least somewhat in touch with design. But it is difficult, and we've all been trained from when we were kids. We went through school, and what is school about is about doing the right thing in the right way to get the right answer. I mean, that's the whole approach in school, basically. Hey, did you come up with the right answer? Well, maybe not. Well, then you didn't use the right approach. So even people who understand this on an intellectual level, and a lot of people understand design on an intellectual level, when it comes to practice, this tradition of using the right tool to achieve a correct answer is so deep in us. We're so trained. It's extremely difficult to get out of that. And I mean, I have examples where I teach design to students who have not been designers before, and they come and they say, but how should I do it? And I say, I don't know. What is it that you're trying to achieve? How do you want to do it? And they want, but I want to know. I want to know how to do it. Tell me how to do it. And tell me what the right answer is. And I say, there is no right answer. And it goes on, and they start to cry. I mean, it's personal. This is not just, this is where, in my mind, theory becomes practice. This is when that student starts to cry, it's because the theory the student has about how the world works and how you're supposed to do things in a good way breaks down. And suddenly that student feels completely lost. I thought I was good. I thought I knew what to do. My teachers always told me, I'm a great student. I do everything. I get good grades. I'm doing. And now I have no clue what to do. Everything just breaks down. And it just sees how the power of, we'll call it theory, or the way we think about the world has over our practice. So it's almost like you have to break that down first for students before they can actually take on this other way of thinking. So when I talk about other ways of thinking, it sounds like, oh, it's just another way of thinking.
Yeah. No, thinking about what?
These are almost deadly serious differences between ways of thinking. I mean, we have wars in the world because of different ways of thinking, about different ways of handling situations and creating change in the world. It leads to serious consequences. So that is really important. It's not just an intellectual thing. It's not just understanding. You actually have to live it. You have to do it and realize that I don't know what I'm doing. I just have to trust myself and the process and see what it takes me. And I might create a horrible design, and that's fine. Now we start all over again. And then I reflect on that. So to do design, reflect on what you do, try to figure out why you do things, why you value certain things and not other things. All that is key to become a good designer. And I can tell you, and this is what I do always with students, I will tell them, if you go to YouTube or somewhere on the internet and you look up design philosophy and you look up famous designers who talk about their design, famous designers, people who have been successful, it's amazing how precise they are. It's amazing how well they know who they are. It's amazing how they can talk about this in a highly abstract, philosophical way about what they do on a very practical level. And because they have done it their whole life.
So you would say, I'm trying to piggyback here on that question. I sense a little bit of Sean in what you're saying, of Donald Sean, of the notion of being a reflective practitioner, of thinking consciously about what one is doing. But also, there's a kind of renunciation that is common in certain Eastern philosophies, and that is also kind of visible in the way in pragmatism, the notion of embodying only when doing one knows, and this separation, this artificial renouncing, this artificial separation between practice and theory, and that one knows only one, that distinction between knowing how and knowing that, and being the first one, the actual type of knowledge. This was just a commentary to introduce.
It's a good one. And it's also, that's to me, that's why I believe theory and philosophy is so important. Because you can, by practicing design, of course you can improve. But if you break down, like the student I mentioned, it doesn't work. It breaks down. It means now your intellectual map of the world doesn't exist. Now you need help. So this is where you can get help from theory and philosophy. You can get help to think about these things, and you can understand why did it happen and what am I doing. It's not going to tell you how to do anything. It's never going to be prescriptive, but it will help you to reconstitute a map that works for you. So that's why design, working with design, has these two extremes. It's all about practice. But if you don't have thinking on the other side and you combine the two, you have nothing. You cannot be a design thinker only. Then you're a researcher.
Yeah.
So a designer who just thinks is nothing. A designer who just practices usually become old and out of touch with the world quickly. They need both.
So it's striving to be designers in the designerly way of of being. One last question from our audience, and I'm sorry to be taking so much time, but it's really interesting to talk with you. They are asking about, do you make a strong connection between judgment and, I introduced the word ethics, even though you did not use it, but I believe it's, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it involves a strong ethical stance, that identity about what one believes to be truth, and what's correct. Again, one quote unquote, large quote unquote. And we seem to be needing, and for example, Mike Monteiro has been talking about this for a long time, following the heels of Viktor Papanek, this ethical role that design has. And to what degree they're asking regulations and a kind of, I would say a bureaucratic, but perhaps it's a bad word to use, but let's say how introducing regulations and trying to adhere designers to follow those kind of ethical code would apply in judgment.
Well, first of all, design is always ethical. I mean, it has always ethical both consequences and aspects. Design is always political. Design is always value-laden. It's always built on value. And why I say that is because what I said before, it's built on judgment, and judgment is a combination of your knowledge and your skills and who you are. So it's all going to come together when you do design. And that means you make judgments as a designer to how do I deal with my own values? How do I deal with other people's values? How do I deal with ethical questions? Do I pay attention to it? Don't I pay attention to it? Should I involve political aspects? Shouldn't I do that? And economical aspects? Do I want to keep my job or do I want to go against my manager? I mean, this comes down to very concrete, very practical questions where all these things come together, the ethical, the philosophical, the values, the personal, but also the functional, financial, time aspects. It all comes together in every judgment that you make. And that means that every little judgment you make is political and it has ethical consequences and all that. And of course, as a designer, you need to know that. You need to understand that, and you need to reflect on that. That's part of reflecting on who you are. And so you understand why your designs end up the way they do. And if partially they end up that way because you bring a lot of your personality, your character into the work, you bring a lot of your beliefs into your work, then of course, your designs will reflect that. Of course, again, we haven't touched the question about designing. I talk about it as if it's one person, but everything I'm saying is the same when it's a group of people or a larger people. It's just the scope that is different. So you can think about the design team as the designer or the design company as the designer. It's just a matter of scope, but everything else is the same.
I'm going to ask one rather complex question, I suppose, and I'm just going to give you some context. We're in the process of evaluating our entire design area at IADE. We're going to be having to probably alter programs. And this involves not only a bureaucratic, a procedural, very large procedural task, but it also involves an epistemic commitment. Because designing a design course, a BA design course, a master's design course, and a doctoral program involves a lot of commitments about what design is, what designers should be, what is their role, what is their ethical sense, what is their capacity to do that. And I would like to get your input on what do you believe that is the most basic elements that training a designer should involve. What are, because we are in the process of seeing, okay, prototyping and drawing are fundamental aspects for design. Critical thinking, whatever that means, is very important for design. Getting some philosophical notions or going for more Don Norman's approach, which is becoming more scientific, more scientifically literate, and knowing statistics and knowing behavioral science. And this also understanding where design is. Should it belong to a faculty of arts? Should it belong in a faculty of its own? Should it be closer to engineering and architecture? So what would be, I know it's a very large and complex, difficult question to ask, but what would be your input here?
Well, first of all, I would do that as a design process. I would approach it in a designerly way, which means, for instance, there are no given things here. There is nothing like what is the absolutely given core elements. No, that's not even possible. That's a scientific way of asking. That's not a design approach. So if it was a design approach, I would start with, what is the purpose? What is the intention? What is the hope for the outcome? What are the desires about having these educations? What is that we want to see people who come out of these programs, what are they supposed to be able to do? I mean, I know you do that. Of course you do that. But I'm just saying that because even if someone else tried to do what you're doing somewhere else in the world, there is no point of them copying you or you copying them, because you are you. You are in a particular place at a particular time with a particular context, with particular expectations from the surrounding system on what you're supposed to produce or what the outcome should be. And it has to be designed for the particular situation. So every design is particular. Of course, I mean, I could talk forever probably about things
that... The ultimate particular.
The ultimate particular. I could talk forever personally what I would like to see in such a program, but that doesn't make sense, you know? I'm not going to be there. I'm not going to teach it. I'm not going to be the students of it. I'm not going to even be the customers of that system. So I can just come up with a list, oh, you have to have this and this and this. Yes. No. That's not how design works. Design works by you and the people involved in this have to take a designerly approach. And that is, what is it that doesn't exist out there in the world today? And what are the consequences of that that we would like to see happen? Okay. Then what do we have to design to make sure that outcome will actually happen? Purpose-driven, intention-driven. That's how I would do it.
Thank you very much. It's been keeping me awake for a long, long time. Totally makes sense. One last question, a little bit on the more speculative side. Our audience asks, if you were to put a team to install the first human base in Mars, would you take a designer? And if so, why?
I don't know. I think
it's a tricky question.
Why? Have you read the movie or seen read the book or seen the movie about, what is it called? Just a couple of years old, about the guy who gets stranded on Mars.
Matt Damon. I did not see the movie.
With Matt Damon.
The Martian. I think it's The Martian.
Okay, it's an excellent book. The book is great. The movie is also good, but the book is really good.
Okay.
And what happens in that book, and this is to answer the question, that guy who got stranded on Mars, he is a scientist. I mean, his knowledge was actually perfect for the situation he ended up. He knows everything about certain things. That's his training. When he ends up in that situation, now he becomes a designer. So he starts to design these things to survive, but it's based on his knowledge of science. So, of course, the answer is, who do you want to put there? Well, you want to put someone there who is probably a scientist, an artist, a designer, a politician, an engineer, you know, because you need all those things to create the society. That's why we have developed them in this world. If we only needed one type of people in this world, we wouldn't have all these different things, but we do. And I'm quite sure that the same is going to be on Mars. Of course, who would be first? Who would you send first? I don't know. I don't know.
Thank you very much.
If you like what you heard today, please subscribe to our podcast on the main platform. For more information about the unreleased podcast, go to unreleased.unitcom-yad.pt. There, you can find all the episodes and more information about our guests. Unreleased Podcast is the result of the work of the Students of Design Culture and Practices course from the PhD in Design program of YAD, Universidad Europea. It's produced and edited by Unitcom.